Blog Talk Radio.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. Thanks for tuning in to the Sunday Brunch Session right here on the Dynamic Dojo Radio Show on the Seika Network. We're on Blog Talk Radio, and we hold our Sunday Brunch Show every third Sunday of each month. Now, normally we're on every Sunday at 6 p.m., but every third Sunday we get to do one cool show while you're having lunch. But for every show, I'm joined with my great co-host and brother in the martial arts, Sifu Robert Deal. Hey, how you doing, Sifu Bob?
Good. It's a little bit cold in L.A. right now, a little bit rainy, but when I talk about rain in L.A., I'm preaching to the choir when I talk to you.
Yeah, right? I was going to say, oh, yeah, what's cold and rainy, like 60 degrees or something like that?
Pretty much.
What's cold and rainy? Oh, my gosh. Yeah, we're expecting a big front coming in, so apparently we're supposed to be getting, like, wind gusts of around 60 miles an hour later on today, and it's cold. It's, like, 35 degrees, and it's like, okay, well, if it snows, I'm in a crappy car. Not a crappy car. I shouldn't say that, but it's a different car that I'm not used to, and that's why I say crappy, because if I'm not used to a car, I'm really light on the gas. I don't know what I'm doing. It's a stick, so it's different than what I'm used to. My car is still in the freaking shop.
Wow.
It's been awesome. So,
well, it was funny. I started this job on Monday, and my boss takes me out somewhere, and he's got a hurt foot, so I'm driving the company car, and I'm on an LA freeway, and he looks over at me and goes, "Why are we doing 40?
He's talking to you on the freeway?
On the freeway. I was driving a big Dodge Ram with a Hemi engine. This thing, when you press on the gas, you get up and go.
Right. Right. That's funny. Oh, gosh. Well, I'm excited about today's show.
This is going to be a great show.
This is going to be so much fun. So for our listeners, if you never tuned into the Dynamic Dojo radio show, this is different than just your regular run-of-the-mill interview show. We also have health news bits and my favorite, weird news and weird laws, with Sifu Bob. And we also have our weekly trivia challenge. And just quickly on the trivia challenge, what happens is every week we have a new trivia question. And if you're the first caller with a correct answer to the trivia challenge, you get to win absolutely nothing except for bragging rights. So, yeah, isn't that great? But no, you actually what happens is the first correct answer caller will get to be a guest co-host with me and Sifu Bob on an upcoming episode. So we have a winner from last week, and I'm still trying to get a hold of her to see if she wants to. I'm beginning to wonder if she doesn't want to be on the show. But
so really, they turned the price down.
Yeah, and the listeners that know us are probably like, I don't know, I don't want to get on the... I don't know if I want to be on this show with those weirdos. And they're martial artists? Really? They are? Oh, my gosh. So we'll have our trivia challenge later. But before we get into all the cool stuff and the interview, it would help if we introduced our interview guest.
That's a great idea. That's why you're the host.
So before we get to the cool stuff, we're going to talk to the really weird guy.
Yeah.
Awesome.
That's right.
It'll make me and Bob feel really normal. No, okay.
Excellent. Excellent. Glad to help.
So our guest today is Gudo West Bennett, and he's got a long list of martial arts experience and training.
Which means I'm old.
Okay. Oh, okay. I thought you were talking about, okay, never mind.
Wow.
Wow.
Thanks for noticing.
That's what happens when I don't have my tea. But
I see.
Okay. Yeah.
What kind of tea are you drinking?
I could probably use that. Maybe it'll get rid of this cold. So if I start coughing in the mic, I'll try not to blow everyone's ears out. But who's our guest today? Oh, Guru Wes Bennett. No, seriously. Long list of martial arts experience, even though he is feeling old. And he's best known being an instructor and a direct student under the late Ted Lukai Lukai, and a longtime practitioner and teacher of Jun Fan and Jeet Kune Do under the late Larry Hartzell. So me and Sifu Bob are very pleased and honored to have Guru Wes Bennett as our guest today. Yay!
Yay! Sound of one hand clapping.
Yay!
Wow!
That's why I brought in the crowd. You see me.
I had no idea there was an audience. Sweet. I was misled. I heard brunch, and I thought there was going to be food involved. No one has shown up at my house. That's all I'm saying.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, you know, I came into the office today. I usually borrow my friend's office, and I come in, and there's this big, a double boiler, and a whole bunch of spices. Like, what is this? This is cloves. I'm like, and I see cider everywhere, and I'm like, oh, she's going to make mulled cider. See, I'll just do that for her.
Whether she was going to make it or not, it was going to get made.
Yeah. Well, I wish I knew how to make it right, but no, I'm not going to mess with it, because if she's listening, she's like, she'll probably call in and go, "Don't touch the double boiler." But anyway,
it's
thanks.
Broken.
It's broken now because Rusty touched it. But so yeah. So but before. Let's get on, and before we do all the health bits and weird news and the interview with the weird guy.
Exactly.
What
you
I
must have spoken to my wife.
Well, actually, we did, Guru, and we decided to have you on anyway.
Yeah, well, it's entirely possible. As my wife always says, before I do any MC work for the radio station, she always says, "Don't try to be funny." Okay.
Don't try to be funny. It'll make it sound like you're thinking. Oh, my God.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Don't have that.
All right. Well,
Rusty's a little rusty around the voice today, I hear.
I am. And that's why I had to, like, I'm trying to, like, move the mic away from my face, and it's attached to my headset, and I don't want to break it off. That would suck. But
Bob, did you get a headset, Bob? Because I didn't get a headset either. I'm holding a phone.
I actually got a headset.
What the heck, man? I got no brunch. I got no headset.
Oh gosh, see, you should have gone into the studio.
Yeah, well, I could have. I'm not sure I could have worked the board, though, so.
Yeah. Oh, that was Bob's dog.
It's not my dog.
Right.
Well, that picks up everything.
It does. Mine does, too.
Nice headset, Bob.
See, and this is why I'm like, we should all Skype this, so that way we can video each other while we do this, but. All right, well, let's get on with the show. The listeners are like, come on.
Well, just to put an image in their head, if we Skyped this, I'd have to put a shirt on. So, see, that's just wrong.
That's right. And they'd say, Rusty, I've got a perfect face for radio, so that wouldn't be a good idea either.
Well, and then Rusty would have to put a top on, too. And then the whole thing, you know, it just goes right out the window.
Exactly.
Right.
Right. All right, let's get moving.
We just picked up 12 new listeners.
Yeah, we did.
Is that the Naked Dojos show?
Right. That reminds me, I need to, I'd like to give out our call-in number so that way we can get those 12 new listeners. Our call-in number here is 347-677-0699. So if you'd like to speak to me or Bob or our special guest, Guru Wes Bennett. I keep wanting to call you West Seattle. I don't know why, but I think I know why. It's an old landlord. But
great, great. I have the sound of an old landlord.
Well, John Bennett actually is his name, and his office is in West Seattle, and he's got a radio voice like yours. It's like wild.
So he's ugly too. I got it.
Gosh, Wes, I got to cough up a lung. Oh, yeah.
Guru Ted didn't teach me how to duck until, like, the last thing in college. So.
Oh, God. So, yeah, 347-677-0699. Call in if you'd like to be part of the fun. The Sunday Brunch Show is meant to be a bunch of fun. We've also got our chat board underneath the show marquee on Blog Talk Radio. And I'll have that up in just a second. But before we move on to the health news and Bob's weird news and weird laws, I just kind of want to, like, sit still for a second. And that's hard to do. And I just want to kind of, like, tone it down for just a little bit because on behalf of the Dynamic Dojo radio show, me and Sifu Bob would like to send out our thoughts to the residents of Newton, Connecticut. Horrible, horrible tragedy that happened this past week, and our thoughts and prayers are with the families affected. Too many people gone too early, and I was deeply saddened on, was it Friday? Yeah, Friday, as I was driving to work and heard the news. It was unbelievable. Everything was surreal. And what made it even more surreal was the amount of traffic that was on the freeway at that time, which there normally isn't all that much. And I thought to myself, oh, my gosh, is everyone else listening to this, too? And, oh, whoa, what was that? That was weird. Did you guys hear that? Or am I hearing
yep,
the voice?
Yep, I heard it.
I heard nothing.
Huh.
And Wes is usually the one hearing the voices.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Go figure. Yeah. Terrible tragedy. Our thoughts are with you, and the Dynamic Dojo is in full support of anyone there that's affected in Newton, Connecticut. Our thoughts are with you. Hey, we've got we had our first guest on chat board. Guest 4510 logged in and logged out. They thought, oh, it's the weirdos. I better log out.
Yeah, they saw that picture of me and left. Hey, I want to, if I may interject, I would like to say that certainly I think we all were affected and are affected by the tragedy in Newton, and more so than probably anyone would like to admit. As martial artists, we look at this kind of thing and go, would it have been different? Could it have been different?
Right.
And whether we talk about, you know, gun laws, or we talk about training for staff, or we talk about whatever, the first thing that we need to remember are that there are families that are hurting. There are people who are gone. And first and foremost, our prayers and our thoughts need to go to those people who are left behind to deal with something that's going to affect them the rest of their lives.
Exactly, exactly. And my thoughts also went to little kids everywhere. That will go up to their parents and ask, "Mommy, is that ever going to happen here?" I mean, what do you tell those children?
Am I safe?
Exactly. Exactly. And what really got my goat and made me even sadder, not even 2 hours after the news broke, was that Facebook and Twitter was inundated with immediate posts about people, you know, touting their political agendas about gun laws and Obama needs to do his job, the government needs to do his job. And I'm thinking, wow, everyone, shut up. Shut up.
And
there are families.
I think many of us felt that way. And I think that rightfully so we felt that way. I think that people who have tried to twist this into a more macabre event than it even is, by trying to use it as a political vehicle. And I personally just want to say that that if you are on my Facebook page or on and I've got about 6,000 people on there at this juncture, I just want to make sure that they understand I don't espouse any kind of political agenda at all. My first and foremost thoughts are with those families, and I wish that everyone else would follow suit.
Right.
If it were your family, I hope that you would feel that way as well.
Right. And, you know, I initially was angry that, number one, that so many young lives that haven't, you know, even really gotten to, you know, the best of their lives had been snuffed out so unexpectedly. I was angry about that. I was angry at, I forgot his name, the guy that gunned down those people.
I think it's best that we forget his name.
Yeah, yeah, and that's probably why I don't remember it. You know, thoughts of, yeah, if it was here, you know, don't execute him, you know, tie him up to a pole and leave it to the parents, you know, just all sorts of thoughts of revenge and angry at people that were just, you know, bad-mouthing Obama for his press conference saying, oh, hug your kids, that's not going to change nothing, blah, blah, blah. It's like, you know what? If it happened here, they'd be pissed, too, if the first thing they heard was, well, gun laws need to be changed. So what about your kid? You know what I mean? It's like, oh, God, you know, it just made me really angry. So we're not going to talk about it anymore. those of us here at the Dynamic Dojo Radio Show do support all of you in Newton, Connecticut. And if there's absolutely anything you need, if you happen to be listening, and I doubt they are because it's too much going on over there, but if they happen to be listening, if you need anything, contact us. We're there for you. Okay.
Absolutely.
So let's move on to some health news. Every week when I look for one health news story, I try to look for things that are kind of, you know, offbeat, kind of odd or important, but this one, I don't even know where to put this. I don't know if it's offbeat. I don't know if it's important. I don't know if it's like a health hazard. I don't know. But this is all about a petition to remove chemicals from Gatorade. And apparently this petition has been on the internet for a little while. And I'll just go ahead and read the story here. From supermarket shelves across the country, fluorescent rainbow sports drinks call to athletes and non-athletes alike, promising them a tasty treat that will also empower them to grunt and sweat like an NFL linebacker. I have no idea why that's the first line.
I would like to hear your impersonation of the grunting and sweating like an NFL linebacker, if that's possible. Okay, yeah, sorry about the voice.
Yeah. That's an NFL linebacker at the age of 50. There we go. but Gatorade may also offer consumers a dose of brominated vegetable oil, it's a flame retardant chemical that, in large quantities, can cause a bunch of health problems. It's flame retardant. Oh my gosh. Okay. So, anyhow.
So I'm drinking paint.
Pretty much.
Right.
The issue drew national attention this week when 15-year-old Sarah Kavanaugh filed a petition on change.org asking that PepsiCo, the company that produces Gatorade, remove the chemical from its beverages. Now, people are asking, well, does it matter? Well, brominated vegetable oil, also known as BVO, contains bromine, which studies have linked to issues including impaired neurological development, fertility problems, and altered thyroid hormones. BVO is actually banned in Europe and Japan, but 10% of the sodas, it's banned in Europe and Japan. But 10% of sodas here in the United States contain that chemical, since it supposedly preserves the flavor in the fruity drinks such as Gatorade, Orange and Mountain Dew.
Have they tasted Gatorade? I don't know that we need that flavor preserved at all, actually.
I know, right? Because it's about as syrupy as it can get. And, you know, this past summer, you know, we had a refrigerator full of G2 Gatorade, and my favorite being the strawberry. And I drank a lot of that junk. And now I'm wondering, oh, my God, right? But now I'm, like, trying to – I'm wondering how much you actually have to drink of this junk before it, like, actually affects you. The safety of it, the BVO, which has appeared in food products since 1930s, that I didn't know. It's a complicated issue. While the FDA has never officially approved it for human consumption, the substance is, quote, unquote, generally recognized as safe. Yeah.
That sounds good. Generally recognized as safe. So is wood pulp, but it doesn't, you know.
Yeah, but I don't eat it. Exactly.
Nails are generally recognized as safe as long as you don't drive them through your hand. However.
Yeah. However. Yeah. Now, apparently, when a company creates a new additive, it can publish information about the additive safety on its website and have a law or a consulting firm decide that it's safe without the FDA's involvement. All right. So, yeah. So a company themselves or a law firm or a consulting firm can say, oh, well, yeah, but it's not world,
that's all right.
So it's safe. Yeah, it's not bleach. Yeah, okay. Without the FDA. I mean, what the heck?
It's antifreeze, but what the heck? It tastes good.
Right. Now,
I do not advocate drinking of antifreeze, by the way. It's poison.
Yeah, don't do it. Hide your antifreeze. Hide the antifreeze, people. It's not Gatorade. Keep it away from the dogs. Now, here was my question when I initially, you know, read this. Is it legit?
Yeah, because it's on the internet. It's got to be legit.
Absolutely. They can't post things that aren't true on the internet.
I know.
Absolutely.
Why would they do that? I mean, you know, only memes are true. So, anyhow. Now, potentially, the FDA did run tests on brominated flame retardants. But that was all the way back in the 70s.
The height of scientific experimentation.
Exactly. Yeah.
Abby
sure.
Hoffman.
Okay. Abby Hoffman, yeah. and that was according to the Scientific American. Now, was the Scientific American around in the 70s? Does anyone know?
I don't know. We're not old enough to know that, Restita.
that's right. I think I was thinking like, yeah, I think I was reading Dick and Jane books or something like that. I don't know. The Scientific American. But certain health experts, including those that are that have been cited in the Scientific American, are concerned that the results of that research in the 70s are outdated, you think? And that bromine might actually be toxic. It's worth noting that most of the recent research on the negative effects of bromine, I don't know how to say it, I'll just say bromine, involved animals that were fed pretty huge doses. Poor little guys. I mean, oh my gosh, really? I mean, there's science for you. Let's feed it to the animal. But no, I mean, I don't want to go on a, you know, hit the animal. But in that case, it's a question of volume, and volume being the key word here. Some experts say that the general population won't even down enough Gatorade or soda that has enough bromine to do damage.
Uh-huh.
But others,
I think they said that about diet soda sweetener too, didn't they?
Yeah, I think they said that about whatever that junk is called. Yeah.
Agent Orange too.
It is, yeah. Oh, it's fine, Agent Orange. Go ahead. But others say that people drink soda frequently enough to incur bromine poisoning. So, like, well, I don't know, video gamers pulling a 24-hour thing, or and I've never heard or read about soda addicts, but I guess they do exist. According to this, there are some soda addicts who consume 2 to 4 liters of soda per day. I can't wait to see what their kidneys look like.
Yeah, I'll be honest with you. There for a time period in my life, when I first moved out of my parents' home, keep in mind there were 8 kids in my mom's house, and we didn't get soda every day. Turns out mom was more healthy than we thought. And I went on a binge, and I literally, for probably 2 years of my life, drank nothing but soda. That was what I drank.
Oh, wow.
And I would have a, in a time period of a 24-hour period, I probably drank 24 to 30 cans of soda per day.
Oh, man.
Yeah,
whoa.
It's horrible. It destroys your entire body.
Yeah, wow. And I thought I was bad when I was, like, in China because when we were in China touring with my teacher, we went to primarily rural places. And if we went anywhere, she said, don't drink the water. So we drank beer the whole month we were there.
The negative side of that is what?
Well, there wasn't. I mean, you know. The only time I didn't drink beer was when I was actually in competition over there, but it was really cool. And then, but then when I got back to the States, American beer tasted funny.
But girl, what she's not saying is her drunken form started
major
great.
Ass. Yeah.
Yeah. Spectacular.
Spectacular. I kicked ass. Oh, gosh. Well, let's go ahead and end this weird news. So, yeah, bromine, brominated vegetable oil. But Sarah Kavanaugh's petition has over 200,000 signatures on it. And
wow.
Yeah, that's a and when I got the story, it was last Monday. So there's got to be at least 300 by now. But to tell you the truth, you know, there's no telling whether or not PepsiCo will make the move to eliminate the chemical from its products. So I guess, you know, if you like Gatorade out there.
Just be aware.
Just be aware. Yeah, you know, don't make it your only thing, you know. So.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
You said something very interesting, Sifu, that it's actually banned in Europe and Japan. They have to sell Gatorade over there as probably the largest beverage manufacturer in the world.
Mm-hmm.
Do they remove this over there?
Well, you know, I don't know. I would imagine that they do, or they manufacture it a little bit differently. But I wouldn't know whether or not they'd be operating under the PepsiCo name. I kind of look at it like Coca-Cola.
Right.
Because, like, in the Philippines, you know, anywhere that I've been out of the United States, the Coca-Cola tastes different. The Coca-Cola in Japan tastes different than the Coke in China, which tastes different than the Coke in the Philippines. And it depends on what cane sugar they use over there or what type of sweetener. Because I know they're not using the any type of synthetic crap or anything like that, or corn syrup. Like we use here.
So is it, and this is maybe a moot point, but is it any better for you because they're not using that synthetic stuff?
I don't think so. I mean, Gatorade is Gatorade. It's still sugar, and it's still some type of artificial flavoring in there. I mean, the only type of Gatorade I can think of that doesn't have artificial flavoring is, lemonade, limeade. Mint julep. Oh wait, no, that's not a sports drink.
Hey, my mom was from North Carolina. Yes, it is.
All right. So that was our health news bit of the week: brominated vegetable oil in Gatorade and certain other sodas. Be aware, everybody.
Read the labels, folks, and if you can't pronounce it, don't drink it.
Don't drink it. That's right. All right.
That's easier said than done.
Yeah, I can't read half of the stuff on beer labels. So.
Well, that's after the beer goggles have set in.
And you know, the funny thing is, I've never read a label on a beer can because I really don't care.
Especially after the first two, huh?
After the first two. That's right.
I really don't care then.
Yeah.
Somebody comes up walking up and goes, "Hey, Bob, what's in your beer?" I don't know, beer.
Beer. Now, do you guys have
all
over
I remember
there?
Is hops and wheat and barley, and that's it.
There you
evidently
go.
Fuzzy
guys...
glasses.
And fuzzy glasses. Now, this is kind of like off the subject. We are going off the subject, but This is the Sunday brunch show, you guys, and I warned everyone on our first episode that we like to have fun, but we also can be very serious martial artists, and we'll get to that after the news, and even then it might not be all that serious because we like to have fun. So if you're listening and you logged into the chat board and logged out because you thought you were listening to a bunch of crazy people, log back in and lighten up. So
that's right.
Right.
If you don't like to have fun, you're listening to the wrong show.
Right, exactly. Remember, yin and yang. Can't be too yang. Can't be too yin. All right.
Right.
Now, this is off the subject, but do you guys over there, down there, have arrogant bastard ale?
I beg your pardon?
I think that's pretty much in
every bar. I have never heard of that brand.
Oh, my God. It's great.
Neither have I, but I've known some arrogant bastards in my life.
Amen.
Amen, yeah. And I'm using
usually they show up to class once.
Yeah. I was just going to say, they normally come in every 6 months, and at my school, if we get an arrogant bastard, and it has never failed. Every time someone starts talking about themselves, I ask them, well, what type of experience do you have? And it never fails if they say, I've got 8 years of Wing Chun or 8 years of Taekwondo. Never fails. It's not 6 years. It's not 2 years. It's 8 years Taekwondo. And or Wing Chun. It was more so Taekwondo. And I think to myself, what is this? Is this like Logan's Run or something, you know, after 8 years? After 8 years of Taekwondo, you have to, like, you know.
It never fails. Every show. You show your age somehow.
Oh, that's what she's showing. Okay, all right, I got you.
Oh, so I guess that means that all the people over 30 years old will understand what I just meant. So, and if you don't understand, if you're like under 30 and you have no idea what Logan's Run is, give me a call, 347-677-0699. We'd love to hear from you. Come on, let's have fun. We'll explain it to you. All right, so let's move on to Bob's weird news. Let's have more fun.
Well, this was, I Google weird news to come up with my stories. This was really disturbing. You read it and you emailed me right away about how weird people are.
Mm-hmm.
A Texas man carved on. Now this occurred at midnight on 12/12/12.
Okay.
A Texas man carved a pentagram. Which a pentagram is a five-pointed figure associated with Satanism.
Oh, gosh,
so
that's right. Yeah.
Carved a pentagram into the back of his six-year-old son with a box cutter.
Oh, give me that box cutter, my dad.
Fort Worth, Texas. A Texas man told authorities he carved a pentagram into the back of his six-year-old son because it was a holy day, in reference to the numerical date of 12/12/12. Police said, Brett Troy Bartell, 39, of a Fort Worth suburb, Richland Hills, was in jail Wednesday on a $500,000 bond, charged with aggravated assault of a family member with a deadly weapon. Police officers responded to an emergency dispatch call shortly after midnight from a man who said, I shed some innocent blood, according to an audio recording of the 911 emergency call released by police. When questioned by the dispatcher, the man said, I inscribed a pentagram on my son. When the dispatcher asked why, the man responded, because it's a holy day, according to the recording. Then he hung up. Moments later, police received another 911 call from the boy's mother calling from a neighbor's house. Just frantic. Now, if I had done that, if any man I know would have done that, he'd have a butcher knife square in the middle of his back.
Right.
His wife.
Yeah.
You know, this story was just very disturbing, but people just go nuts for the weirdest, snap for the weirdest thing.
Right.
So that was my Reader's Digest version. I get upset every time I think about that because I have two kids.
Right, right.
You know,
and the wife, I missed something.
Where was the mom in this?
Oh, wait. Yeah, okay.
She freaked out, went to a neighbor's house, and called the police
from there. Right. Okay.
She was in fear for herself. Instead of grabbing her son and round-kicking this guy right in the head, she ran and called police away.
Oh, man. Oh, man. It's amazing.
Wow, I read this story and freaked out.
Yeah. It's like sometimes I don't understand. Well, I mean, I understand that mental illness exists, but, you know, hearing news like this, you know, any news like this where you're harming children, it's unfathomable. Oh, my God. But holy day, huh?
Yeah, just because it was 12-12-12, the last time this century that the day, the month, and the year are going to align like that.
Yeah, of the century,
I have to intersperse. The use of the word holy day, when he carves a pentagram, wouldn't it be an unholy day?
Is that, yes, absolutely.
I mean, if you're going to believe in the bad, then you got to believe in the good, because you can't have yin without yang, right? So why would you pick the bad one?
I don't know.
Has he not read how this ends?
Yeah. I think it's a
pattern. Hey, Chachi, smooth move.
Yeah. I think it depends on what a Satanist view of holy is. I guess if it's important, you know, and
interesting.
Whatever the word. Yeah, so it's just, anyhow. Okay, moving on.
Moving on to my weird lot.
Woo!
These are all from Arizona. And you have to remember, Arizona was the last one to accept Martin Luther King's birthday as a holiday. They instituted some weird immigration laws where the police could just ask for your immigration papers at the drop of a hat. A person that commits a misdemeanor while wearing a red mask is considered committing a felony at that point because they're wearing a red mask.
What?
Yeah.
Wait. Okay. So you can wear a white mask. You can wear a purple and pink mask. But
you wear a red,
mask,
and it's a no-no.
No-no.
That makes no-no sense.
That makes no-no sense. Absolutely.
Oh my God!
Now the next one must make it almost impossible for people to leave a parking space in the city of Glendale, Arizona. It is illegal to drive a car in reverse.
Wow! Interesting.
So do they have two doors on a garage? One through the front and one through the back? How does that work?
Right, they all have that circular driveway.
Oh, my God.
In Nogales, Arizona, there is an ordinance that prohibits the wearing of suspenders.
Oh, whoa. Dang.
So that's where the droopy pants originated.
Yeah, I guess that's where the hanging pants, right?
Yeah.
Right. And of course, Girl West, being from Kentucky, most of the people who live in his state could live in Arizona.
Yeah. I'm close to Kentucky, not in Kentucky. I'm 45 minutes north, and I value all of those miles.
Now, this is an interesting one, Steve, but this will kill you. In Tucson, it is illegal for women to wear pants.
Well, all righty then.
It is illegal in the state of Arizona.
Well, that sucks.
Yeah.
Oh, it took you a while to find that one.
Yeah, well, I did it early. I did it earlier, and I didn't hit the button. But
oh, okay.
That's what he said.
It is illegal to take nude photographs before noon on Sunday.
Before noon?
What?
Before noon on Sunday.
Sweet, we're past it then.
You and I have discussed this, Tifu. There must have been a problem for them to come up with these laws.
Yeah, there yeah, has I, to be. Yeah, yeah,
there was somebody at 10 o'clock in the morning going, she's naked. Yeah, not before noon, dude. No, can't do that.
It's, you know, I'm wondering if it's because of church.
Well, yeah, you can't have nude photography in the church.
That's right. That's absolutely
frowned upon. It is frowned upon in most, you know, not every denomination, but most.
It's also frowned upon in buses. In trains.
I think I just heard somebody Catholic in the group yell, bingo.
Now, the next one, I just thought it's considerate to do, but it is considered unlawful to refuse a person a glass of water.
Dude, what?
If somebody comes up to you and asks you for a drink of water, you cannot refuse that person.
Oh, okay.
Well, okay, well, but it's kind of an insult with our tap water, so.
Yeah. So does that mean you have to carry around a bottle? Oh, my gosh. Okay.
Yeah, if you have a bottle of Arrowhead or another, you have to give it to them. You can't refuse them. Now, the next one I found interesting because of, you know, the Martin Luther King Day and the immigration laws they put in place.
Right.
Arizona is the only state that has an English-only law for public school.
Wait. Really? English only, so like if people come up from Mexico, legally, of course, they...
Of course.
Of course.
Of course, yeah, we know they don't have any illegals in Arizona.
Right. So, well, I mean, but... So that means that kids that have immigrated through, if they don't speak in English, what are they going to do? You know, bring in the English police and cart these kids away? I mean, what is this? I mean,
that's
ridiculous. That's ridiculous. I mean, considering
that's why these are called weird laws.
Yeah, that's ridiculous. Oh, my God.
That's a weird law, Bob.
That is weird.
That is a weird law. All right. Now it's time for the trivia question of the week, people.
It is. All right. So for our listeners that just tuned in, our trivia question of the week, we have one every week. We're looking for the first caller with the first correct right answer. Okay. And for the duration of the show, we're looking for the first caller. We hope somebody calls in, but if no one calls in, we will put it on the Dynamic Dojo Facebook page. But come on, guys, have some fun with us and actually call in. and if you're the first correct answer, you get to have the opportunity to be a guest co-host with me and Sifu Bob on an upcoming show.
We really need to get a better prize.
Yeah, I know, right? Well, I thought about, martial arts lessons. And, I don't know. Considering that,
well,
you know, if most of our people are martial artists, it doesn't apply. So, but we've already had a great co-host. We had Sensei John Border with us last week. And that was
last
really
week.
Yeah, and we also have another co-host that we're going to hopefully slate for next week. So it's really fun. So, yeah. Okay, so... our trivia question of the week. I got to find it now. Oh, here we go. Sculptor Dredrick Auguste Bartholdi.
Bless you.
Let's try this again. Sculptor Dredrick Auguste Bartholdi faced the face of the Statue of Liberty on whom? Sculptor Dredrick Bartholdi faced the face of the Statue of Liberty on whom? 347-677-0699. Give us a call if you're the first correct answer. You get to have fun with me and Sifu Bob on an upcoming show. So, all right.
And it's really and Sifu, if they're really interested on becoming a co-host with us, they have really low expectations in life.
Aim higher.
Aim higher.
Yes, aim way higher.
Yeah. No. seriously, though, you know, as much as we like to have fun, we can become very passionate about the martial arts talk about training and health and fitness and stuff like that. So, you know, I just want our listeners to know that, yes, we like to have fun, but we are martial artists first and foremost. It's our lives. For many of us, it's our livelihood. So, yeah, you know, feel free to be a co-host with us if you'd like. All right. So how about we go ahead and just take about a minute for a quick PSA. I'm going to get a quick drink of water. There's a water fountain outside because I'm finding it hard to talk now. So,
yeah.
So let's just,
that means she's popping the cork on the tequila.
That's right. Gosh, you weren't supposed to check that. You're not supposed to read that chat board out loud.
It's for medicinal purposes.
Right. All right. All right. So let's have a quick word from the Ad Council.
This is Healthcare 411, information for better health. October is Health Literacy Month, a good time to remind Americans that many of us could stand to improve our health literacy skills. ARC Director Dr. Carolyn Clancy explains.
Health literacy isn't just about being able to read. It's about how well a person can find and understand information about healthcare. This understanding plays a big role in how well a person can take information and use it to make good decisions about their care, such as following directions for treatment.
So where can consumers find reliable yet easy to understand health information?
HealthFinder.gov, a federal website designed to help people stay healthy, provides evidence-based health information in both English and Spanish. And this site has recently been improved to make it even easier for consumers to find and use helpful information to better understand their own health.
Healthcare 411 is produced by ARC, the Agency for Healthcare Research and Quality, part of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Deborah Jane for Healthcare 411.
And now, on with the show.
All right. If you're just tuning in, you tuned in to the Dynamic Dojo Radio Show with Rashida and Robert. And we are joined by Guru Wes Bennett. So we had a fun first 45 minutes of the show. So if you just tuned in, you missed out on a bunch of fun. So continue to listen.
Or right. Else.
I know, right? Or else. All right, I just want to remind our listeners about our trivia question of the week. The trivia question is, sculptor Dredrick Auguste Bartholdi based the face of the Statue of Liberty on whom? First correct answer, yes, to be a co-host with me and Sifu Bob, 347-677-0699. That's our call-in number. Yeah, wow, I think that's it for the weird news and stuff like that. Neat. It's time for our interview with Guru Wes. Yay!
Yay!
Yay! All right. All right. Now, this, I'm sure you know, in other interviews that you've done, everyone asks you this question first. Can you tell us a little bit about your early years in the martial arts as a kid? And that's what I'm going to ask.
I could be one of those interview guys and just go, no.
I was not a kid.
Yes, I was born this big. My first lessons in martial arts were at the hand of my older brother. Well, it was one of those things, you know, he'd been off to church camp, and there was a black belt under Ed Parker, who was in Kenpo. And, you know, he had taken about a week's worth of training and came home and he's doing all this stuff. And I'd always had an interest in it, you know, and keep in mind, I was born in 62. So, you know, there was a lot of Bruce Lee stuff going on in my younger days, in my mm-hmm. childhood. And so I see this, my older brother comes back from church camp for a week and suddenly he's, as far as I was concerned, a ninja. He knew like three basic kicks, two basic blocks, and one punch, you know, and I'm like, wow, that's awesome, you know. So I signed up for the camp immediately the next week following that, and this pastor, again, was a, I want to say third or fourth Dan, And long story short, I took a week's training, came back and practiced that stuff for the next year. And then they put me into that camp again. And I came back and he took me aside and he says, son, you've been practicing that wrong for a year.
Yeah.
So, you know, then we moved from a very small town in Illinois to a very large town named East Gary, Indiana, whereupon everybody had a gang and they all beat me up. I even the redheaded kids beat me up. I mean, it was bad. The ginger gang beat me up. It was bad. No offense to the gingers out there. I'm just saying. I was the only three-quarters Cherokee Scotch-Irish blend within a probably 400-mile radius, and they were like, new guy, beat him up. My mom tried teaching me how to box. That did not work out so well. Mom was not a boxer. So they took me down to the local dojo, and I started studying right after I picked myself up off the floor because my older brother also had taught me a smart mouth. And I walked in, and the sensei was throwing these kicks, you know, and I said, my brother says that only sissies kick. And the next thing I know, he's got a foot in my chest. And I'm probably 8, 9, 10 years old, you know, and I came up off the wall, and I said, that'll do, sir. I think I'd like to study here, and shook his hand, and we became friends after that. And I studied for a long time in what he termed American freestyle karate. I don't know what the derivation was. Later years, I found out that he taught a very traditional form of Kenpo, and he had blended some other things into it, but it was very much traditional Japan Karate Association rules and regulations and forms. So enjoyed the forms very much, found myself moving on into other things and learning to fight and do ring stuff, which required more boxing instruction and things like that. So, but that was how that's how it all started.
So, with your boxing, did you pursue it to fight professionally, or?
I did actually. Went on to be a professional kickboxer. Fought for 2 years amateur, and then fought 3 years professionally. My jaw is now made of DuPont, which probably has Gatorade, I mean bromine in it, and I told you I didn't learn to duck until way later, and you know, there's a certain bunch of things that come along with that, and how I got involved in the Filipino martial arts and Jeet Kune Do was not only watching through Bruce Lee and always having an interest of it, but I had a coach that was schooling me for the ring. He said, and keep in mind, he was a karateka, and he pulls me aside and says, hey, all that stuff that they taught you here on the forms, yeah, forget all of that. You're not going to use that stuff. Here's what you need to do. You need to dance around a lot more. And I basically looked at him and I go, so why did I hire you again? And he's like, well, you know, I'm going to. And so I ended up hiring a boxing coach and did follow that. I also fought amateur boxing for a while and found out that boxers are probably some of the toughest athletes in the world. Mm-hmm. And that is from a former lineman on a football team. So, I was a center for a football team, and we moved about 10 feet a game. our job was to be big and not let the other guy run over the little skinny dude behind me. But, I think boxers, because of the abuse that they take each round and the amount of energy they have to expend at the same time, I really think that they are probably the most in-shape athletes and underrated athletes in the world.
Yeah, that's for sure. Because I've never, like, boxed. I mean, I've boxed, but not, like, you know, professionally or anything like that. And I thought to myself, I don't know if I'd be able to take that on a regular basis.
back in my day, and you know, I remember when my day was just yesterday. but now I look at it and they go, wow, the rounds are shorter. There's less of them. But, you know, 15 rounds was not unheard of. in a professional fight. Now, you know, if it goes past 10 rounds, there's something going on. There's some kind of, you know, hoopla. It's like, oh, my God, this is the longest fight in history. And it, no, not really.
Yeah. Well, you know, going back to the days of, like, John L. Sullivan and stuff like that, I mean, weren't there fights, like, upwards of, like, 50 rounds, all-day things?
Yeah.
People that just sit around, have, you know, have drinks and picnics and 100 rounds and watch people puke and get knocked out and get back up. And how the heck did you win?
Yeah, exactly. You didn't really want to have the front row seat for that if you're having the picnic.
No. Well, they didn't have gloves back then, did they?
Most of the bare knuckle stuff, obviously was knuckle, and then you know it started out they would wrap their hands more to protect their hands than it was the other fighter, which you know I found out later was a throwback to stuff that had happened early. You know, the pendulum swings both ways a lot. They forget that guys used to wrap their hands and put weapons inside of it and things like that. So, you know, dip their hands in this or that and crush whatever and put on there to cut the fighter up. And then you go to, okay, well, you can't have anything on your hands. And now we're back to the, you know, the large gloves and foot trapping and people taking a face plant. So...
Yeah.
Right.
I was like, really, Manny? You should have seen that coming, buddy. You've used it a lot.
Well, that's
but
cool.
But anyway, the coach that I hired for boxing happened to be of Filipino descent, and that was where I got my first taste of, what I call Panatukan now, but called it dirty boxing.
Love it. I love it.
It works. Yeah. It works. It, you know, as long as you don't get caught, it works.
Yeah. Yeah. I love it. Now, I was like typing on the chat board here, so I don't think, I don't remember if I asked what your record was as a boxer.
Well, as a boxer or a kickboxer?
Oh, both. Sure.
My record in the boxing ring was... 10-1, all amateur. My record in the kickboxing ring the year that I retired was 18-5.
Oh.
So I did okay, you know.
Yeah.
Again, thick head, you know, I didn't learn very fast to duck, but, you know, I got a hard head, so.
There you go. And that makes it for a nightmare for some punk in the dark alley that decides to, like, punch you in the head. They'll be like, how come he's not going down?
Yeah, I thought he was supposed to fall. In all those movies, that guy fell down.
Yeah.
Which, you know, it begs the discussion. I went on into working security and defensive tactics for law enforcement, the Department of Corrections, and being a personal bodyguard to people who had more money than I did.
Right. You were a bodyguard. Tell us a little bit about that, how you got into that. What got you interested in that?
I found out I could get paid more than what I was getting paid in the ring, and didn't have to get hit on a daily basis. So.
Uh-huh.
I think the most I ever made off of a fight when I was a pro was $500. You know, you see all these million, billion-dollar fights, but I wasn't one of them. There's a lot of other fighters who are working day-to-day and trying to make ends meet and feed their families. And, you know, those guys are the soldiers. They get out there and they do it every day. This is their livelihood, and they've got that one shot out. And mine wasn't that case, you know. I went back to college and stupidly enough, got a degree in radio television. If anybody's listening this morning and thinking of going into radio television, don't do that.
You know, I actually thought about doing that. I was, I took radio TV all through high school. And it was kind of a toss up. I didn't quite know if I, was more attracted to radio or, TV broadcasting. But once I got out of high school and started getting into college, I told myself, okay, I'm going to get into radio. But
it's a good gig if you want to, you know, if you, well, the joke is if you don't mind being broke. Again, the upper 5-10% make a lot of money. But the rest of us work day to day. And, you know, when the road is closed because of a snowstorm or whatever, we're the guy who has to drive on the road and go tell everybody, hey, the road's closed. Don't drive on it.
Exactly. Exactly. And you know, and at that time though, I was working for a restaurant that didn't take snow as an excuse, so I was used to driving around, and I thought, you know, I could do that. I could do that. But then I decided to drop out of college, unfortunately. So I was like, ah.
Well, but that's okay. In 30 years of radio, nobody's ever asked to see my transcripts, so I'm good.
Okay. There you go. And to this day, I still wouldn't mind getting into radio, but yeah, that's, people have told me about the pay, but anyhow, bodyguard.
Bodyguard, yeah. It was one of those things where somebody approached me and said, "Hey, would you want to, you know?" And I had done and this is going to sound silly, but there was a guy in junior high school who came to me and knew that I was studying martial arts, and I was a big guy. I was already 6 foot tall when I was 12.
Wow.
I weighed close to 200 pounds. I'm just a big guy. And he came to me, and he was the kid that always had the money in his pocket, but he always got beat up at lunch.
Oh.
he was that kid, you know? And he comes to me, and he goes, "Hey, I'll pay you $5 a day if you'll protect me at lunch." That was my first paid bodyguard gig.
$5 a day? I didn't even get that. A week.
I know, right? I made less than college in high school. I had, but in junior high school, and I had, you know, like a dog at home, and I had a guinea pig or whatever, you know, and I'm buying food for it. I'm like, this is cool. I could do this. That's $25 a week. I could, yeah. I said, "Who's beating you up?" And he said, "This guy over here." Well, it turns out I knew the guy. So,
oh.
So I'm like, "Hey, this works for me." So I walk over to him and I go, "Look, this dude is going to pay me $5 a day. I'll give you a dollar of that if you just leave him alone." He's like,
uh-huh.
"Yeah, it works for me." That was what I learned about networking. You don't always have to fight to get your way out of it. But when
right.
I was in the ring, you know, somebody approached me and said, "Hey, you know, would you like to do this?" And I said, "Well, what kind of money are we talking about?" And the guy's like, you know, he's like, "I don't know, we'll pay you $150 a day plus expenses." And I'm thinking, well, let's see, I just spent 6 months training for this fight. I made $500. Yeah, I'm good.
yeah.
Later on, it paid a lot more, you know, but it was an interesting thing because you get to see, first of all, a glimpse into how the other side lives. Because these people had a lot of money, but they were still scared of this one, that one, or the other. They had some definite security concerns. And you have to be that line of defense between them and whatever that fear is. And you get to see, you know, how that fear affects them and how that... I'm not afraid of much. My mom always said that was just dumb, but and don't get me wrong, I know there's going to be a time and place where my time is going to come.
Mm-hmm.
I figure it's going to come anyway, whether I'm afraid of it or not. So, but I've got a few scars, you know. There was a couple of knives that came into play. Been there, done that, got the scars to talk about. I started out working for individuals, then I ended up working for record companies for different bands, and then I worked for individuals that had more money than I could ever count. And you get to see a lot of different things that go on in their lives. And in that, you learn a lot. You take notes from the older guys who have been doing this for a while. It's much like the martial arts. You
right.
become an expert through learning from the experts. You know, you don't just jump in and go, "Hey, I've got a better way of doing this." So, but it's an interesting life, you know. I've driven that grapevine many times out there in L.A.
I bet.
Yeah, that traffic out there just sucks, Bob. No offense.
Oh, it does. I'm right there with you, Wes.
And as you're driving it, the first time you drive it, you're like, "Oh, the grapevine." You know, it sounds cool to say it. And you're driving, you're like, "Boy, this is... I've never seen so much dead grass in my life. What is the grapevine doing out here? Because it's dead." And I don't care what they say. Those cows in California, they are not happy.
No. Oh, no.
They're on hillsides. They've got dead grass. There's no tree. But, I enjoyed being a bodyguard. There's a lot of stuff that goes into that, you know, that people don't see. There's a whole lot of boring times. There's a whole lot of sitting in airports and waiting. Mm-hmm. And we didn't have iPads or smartphones back then, so there's a whole lot of sleeping on a chair and a whole lot of, you know, just waiting. You know, it's much like being a martial artist back in the day. We didn't, you know, when you went to those competitions, Battle of Atlanta or wherever, you sat.
It was hurry up and wait. Yeah, it was hurry up and wait.
Very much like the military.
Yeah, I remember those days. I remember those days. That's awesome.
Yeah. It's
so
like, how'd you get a bad back? Did you get injured? No, I sit too much.
Now, in your executive security experience, did you have the opportunity to work with any notable celebrities?
Yeah. You know, there were bands. I'm assuming that's what you're alluding to.
Yeah.
I worked for a country group named Alabama. Worked for REO Speedwagon. Technically, I worked for the record company. I was assigned one or two guys in the band that I had to do my thing for, and you know, and then there were some others in the band that, you know, they weren't my assignments, but you end up having to do stuff while you're there. So, Stevie Ray Vaughan was a great man. There are codicils and contracts that I'm not allowed to talk about a whole lot of stuff, but
right. Uh-huh.
Yeah, no talk clauses. Yeah, those do exist.
Yeah.
But yeah, they do exist, and for reasons, you know, there are things not just security concerns, but there are road stories that people just don't need to know.
Right.
Yep. Let me just say this, they all put their pants on one leg at a time just like everybody else.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But awesome. You couldn't tell the story Tucson where they didn't have their pants on at all.
Exactly. A bunch of people walking around and have bottomless. It's just weird. Put some pants on.
My eyes, put some pads on.
Yeah. You know, a lot of the people listening may be thinking, you know, hey, there's some hot gals in Tucson. Keep in mind, there's also some gals who look like me and Bob, and now they're pantless, and it's not necessarily a good thing. I'm just saying.
Oh, man, thanks for that visual, girl.
Thanks for that visual, you guys. It was the bleep.
Keep in mind, it's a black lacy thong. That's all I'm saying.
Not enough eye bleach.
Yeah. I'm now poking out my own mind's eye.
Boy, I can wait all day to get out.
Turns out, Bob, you did wait all day to hear that one. After looking at the picture on the internet, you'll never be able to get that out of your head.
Yeah. Good luck with that.
Yeah.
Now, because I got the studio board up. Damn it.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, God, he's got no pants on.
Oh, God. What's going on? That's why everyone's logging off the chat board. No. For our listeners, our call-in number here is 347-677-0699. Call in and have fun with me, Fifu Bob, and Guru West Bennett. We are having a total blast on this Brunch Sunday show. Come join us. And our trivia question. Come on, folks. Answer our trivia question. Let me go ahead and do a reminder on the trivia question. Our trivia question for the week is, who did the sculptor Dredrick Auguste Bartholdi, he's the guy that sculpted sculpted the Statue of Liberty. Who did Dredrick Bartholdi base the face of the Statue of Liberty on? So call us, 347-677-0699. Dredrick, what's his name? I'm having a hard time even saying this. This name. I just want to say it just because it sounds cool. Dredrick Auguste Bartholdi. Dredrick, B-R-E-D-E-R-I-C. August with an E. And Bartholdi. So think Italian, B-A-R-T-H-O-L-D-I. Bartholdi. So, sculptor, who did he face the face of the Statue of Liberty on? First Red Caller gets to be guest host on an upcoming show with me and Sifu Bob. So, let's see. I lost my questions, Wes. I don't know why.
You're probably reading the chat board where I'm going, what's that name again? Some foreign guy, Dread, what?
What is that name again? Some Farigner, foreigner.
Yes, exactly. I can't type.
Bartoldi.
I got the question in front of me, people.
Okay. Okay, well.
So Guru, when did you meet Guru Ted, and what attracted you to the college stick work?
Oh, thank God you said college stick work instead of him. I was like, dude, don't start rumors like that. That ain't right, man. You know, I met him in the early 80s. And first of all, if you never got a chance to meet Guru Ted, you missed out on a great human being. Sorry, it gets a little emotional for me. I apologize.
Yeah.
Sometimes when you least expect it. He's been dead since 96. And I spent more than 11 years studying with him. I'd also studied with Sifu Larry Hartzell, and that's how I came to meet Guru Ted the first time. And let me say, the first time was, you know, it was a great, I met the whole family. Everybody was nice to me. Sifu Larry used to hang out at the Lakai Lakai house. They were very close friends, and everybody just kind of hung around and, you know, drank a few beers. I don't drink, so I was the guy going, do you not have sweet tea in California? What the hell is wrong with you people? So, you know, Mama Rose was very nice to me. The whole family was just, they kind of adopted me as the biggest Filipino they've ever met. You know how the Filipinos are, and I say this with utmost respect. They're always telling you, eat more.
Exactly.
They're always, eat more. I'm the guy who's like, gladly, I will.
You know, if you ever come to Seattle, oh, my gosh, you're staying with me. If you or your family come to visit Seattle, you guys are staying with me. Yeah, I'm Filipino to a fault.
You can't get good Filipino food around here. I got one family that takes care of a fat man out here, and that's it.
Oh, really? Only?
Yeah.
Really?
Just,
oh,
it's sad. It's sad. But, I have to say hi to Jack and Nene out there because they're, you know, they take good care of me, and Mel and everybody, the whole family. But anyway, so a few years later, I say a few years, you know, maybe a year and a half later, I had left a message. This is going to sound so bad, and I don't even know why I'm telling you this story, but I'm in the midst of it, so here goes. What are you, the Barbara Walters of Blog Talk? What is this? Oh, wait. I was trying to write
Barbara Walters imitation.
Yeah, you can. You just have to mess up all your R's.
Bubba Wawa. So tell us, Wes.
I'm getting sued over that.
There
will be a lawsuit involved. There will be legal papers drawn up.
I don't.
Bob will have to drive from L.A. to deliver them.
I don't want people calling in. Okay.
Oh, God, no, we don't. Yeah, go ahead, call in. We.
I don't want people calling in to tell me I suck.
Well, they can call and tell me I suck. That's fine. I was in the midst of trying to write a book. I'm three-quarters Cherokee, and I had been studying some of the knife techniques and skills from the Cherokee Nation. And they were dying out, and I found that sad. And so I'm trying to write this book, and somebody says, you need to compare that with some of the work from the Filipino. And I was like, oh, that's interesting. You know. So I call Guru Dan. This is back in the day when you could actually call, and he would actually answer the phone. No offense to anyone, but, you know, now there's levels of trying to get through to him. And he's still one of my idols, and I still think very highly of him and his entire family. But things have changed since the late 70s, early 80s at the academy.
Mm-hmm.
Long story short, I called and I said, Guru, I'd like to know, who do you consider the best knife guy in the world? And he said, oh, you got to talk to Teddy. And I was like, okay, Teddy who?
Yeah.
You know, And he says, oh, Teddy Lakai Lakai, he's I think, extremely highly, you know, and he highly recommended that I talk to him. And I said, okay. I said, well, when is he there? And he said, he teaches on this day and this day. You know, you can call over here and talk to him. I said, okay. So I call back, and I get one of the senior students, and I leave a message. A couple of weeks go by, I get no call back. I'm trying to shorten this up. But anyway, after about the third week, I call back, leave another message with another senior student. This time I take the name down of the student. Still no call back, and I'm thinking, you know what, now I'm just getting irritated. So I call back the fourth week. This has been a month now, and the guy answers the phone, and I said, okay, so here's the deal. I'm calling from Illinois. Again, this is before cell phones, so each one of these calls cost money.
Right.
Long-distance calls, yeah.
Yeah, where you had to actually yell into the phone for them to hear you.
Exactly. You know,
yeah.
Still, yes, these kids have it. They're so spoiled.
They are.
I still had rotary dial back then.
My mom
Somebody's
still
Googling.
Yells into the phone.
Somebody
like,
is Googling that right now. They're going, rotary dial? What the hell is he
what
talking
is
about? So right. I just start berating this guy on the phone right away. I'm just like, I'm into him. I'm like, dude, seriously, what is the malfunction? Why can you people not? I have left message after message after message, and he's apologizing all over. I'm really sorry, sir. What is, you know, what's the deal? And I said, look, I'm trying to get a message to this guy. He says this and dances to talk to him. Okay, so I'm trying to talk to him, and you people aren't even giving him the message. I just go off. And he said, well, let me take down a message. I go, brother, I have heard that before. And he goes, no, seriously, I'm good. Who are you trying to reach? And I said, I'm trying to reach this guy named Teddy. And he goes, oh, well, that's me. I said, no, he's one of the instructors there. He goes, yeah, I'm Ted Lakai Lakai. And I was like, oh, crap. So we talked for probably... Yeah, both feet, size 13, right in my mouth. So,
nice person,
I try. I, if you're going to leave an impression, leave a big one. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
So I, we talked for about an hour, and he said, look, I got to go teach class. I'll call you back. And I said, well, okay, and I apologize again. And he says, no, it's fine. You know, I didn't get the other messages, but, you know. And so next thing you know, within a month, I'm flying him out here for a seminar to the Midwest in February.
man.
Yeah, keep in mind he's born in Kauai and lives in California.
Yeah.
He shows up
and
with his
Filipino,
heavy coat,
yeah.
Which is a windbreaker. Poor guy. And he walks off the airplane, and I was like, and he looks at me, and he looks straight up, and he goes, U.S.? And I go, yes, sir. Are you Ted? He goes, uh-huh. And I go, we've met before. He goes, no, I think I would have remembered. You're huge. And that's how, you know, we always had that humor. That's the one thing I miss about him even more than his instruction and his knowledge is his laugh. He had a great laugh. And he was just a great human being. In the entire time that I knew him, I only heard him say a negative thing about somebody one time, and that was somebody who had wronged his father. And I'm not going to name that person on the air, but... that was the only time I ever heard him say anything negative about anyone. Plenty of opportunities too, but you know, he just was not that type of person. And Guru Dan was right. For such a friendly, nice guy, probably one of the most underrated, deadliest men on earth.
Mm-hmm.
Between he and his father, to watch them, and I've watched them not just with beginning students, which, as we all know, hard to fit in with, but even with masters from outside of their niche, they were able to blend and fit in with them so well that both the other master and they would walk away with so much respect for each other that, you know, and that back in the 80s just was not heard of. It was still stealing back then, remember?
Mm-hmm.
Now it's sharing.
Yeah, now it's sharing.
Yes. But back in the day, you didn't mention, as a matter of fact, I'll tell another story here. Guru Lucky, who studied with Manon Kabbalis alongside Guru Ted, was asked to leave the class when they found out he was a Kali man because they said, oh, no. We can't have that mix in here. No, absolutely not. And he was just as skilled as Guru Ted was. And Guru Tegh was one of the first people to graduate from Menon Caballos. And obviously that was, if you see those little clips of tape sometime on YouTube where they're really dark and Guru Tegh is like standing on a bench and Guru Dan is there and they're doing all this other stuff. And then you see the next clip of tape after that is Menon Caballos and Guru Tegh, and you can't really tell who Menon is working with. It's Tegh, and that was his test. There was no announcement of, hey, your testing date will be on X. It was, oh, okay, today we're just going to flow, you know, and he has to flow, and he kept up with him, and you're watching this, and you're going, wow, that was pretty amazing. He goes, yeah, that was my test. He didn't announce that ahead of time.
Oh, wow. That's the Filipino training for you.
yeah, exactly. Surprise, you're testing. Oh, well, and they tell you afterwards.
Yeah. You're like, what, really? Really?
and that's pretty much how I have followed in his footsteps. I teach very what people now consider old school. It's hard for me to think of myself as, you know, being one of the old school, but as the masters and grandmasters have passed away, you know, we have become the old guard.
Right.
And we have to protect, and at the same time, we have to pass this art on. I think the worst thing we could do is keep it all so much under wraps and so secret sacred that we don't pass it on, because the old ways will die out without someone taking it up.
Exactly. And didn't we talk about something like that last week? Yeah. We talked about that very same subject last week about people with the highfalutin egos and stuff like that will hoard their knowledge and not, you know, teach their students, you know, how to be better than they are because they want to be the best or something. And you know, well, granted, those types of people can, you know, are a detriment to any martial art. But yeah, we had a talk about that, and it was a very passionate discussion last week about martial artists with egos that will not teach, but rather or won't share. I should say they won't share.
And some, I think all of us have some techniques that we hold back. Well, just as a matter of survival.
Yeah.
Else.
Exactly. Well, yeah, survival, and if a student isn't ready for it, then they're not ready for it.
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
You know,
my gurus used to always say, Guru Lucky and Guru Tegh both used to always say, it's not secret, but there are some things that are sacred. And and you don't come to someone who's say going through catechism classes, or, and I'm not Catholic, but I have a lot of friends who are. I played them once on TV. No. I did a Holiday Inn Express last night, so I know all about it. No. But I see reasons for, you know, like you said, there are certain things they're not ready for it. You know, you can't just give it to them and say, okay, here's the box of stuff. Just there you go. You know, and that's not how it works. Sometimes you have to learn those lessons hard.
Exactly.
I remember Guru Lucky telling me a story about, you know, a certain maneuver, and then a few months later, without any warning, he demonstrates that maneuver on me, and as I'm laying on the floor, looking up at him, he says, now you see, and he pushes his glasses up on top of his head, and he goes, you cannot breathe right now because I hit that nerve in your arm I was telling you about. If I had just told you the story, you would not have believed me, but right now you're just hoping to God you get another breath.
That's right. Oh,
and he's right.
Wow. Oh my God,
Guru,
you sounded exactly like my dad. Yeah. That was crazy.
I work with voices a lot. Guru Lucky
was
one of those. I loved doing
breath.
His voice.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, that's awesome. Now, speaking of hard training, because it is, you know, it is Filipino martial art, and you know, like with many Southeast Asian martial arts, it's not necessarily like curriculum based, right? You know, you don't get this cool notebook, you know, in your karate class that has,
there's no book written about it.
There's no book written about it. There's no video, and there's no curriculum that, oh, this is what I need to know for yellow belt. Now, in your training with Master Lucai, both Lucky and Tegh, What was it like training? I mean, was there like, you know, out in the field somewhere, you know, running through water? You know what I mean? I mean, was there really, you know, was there any like funky training?
You obviously have never seen a full size picture of me. Wes don't run. That's why he learned how to fight.
No,
Wes's version of running is the. Go ahead.
No playing around with water buffaloes or nothing, right?
No. God love him. That just looked like so much fun, too, didn't it?
Yeah.
That poor water buffalo was looking at him like, come on, seriously, man?
Seriously? You know,
yeah,
I just looking at him going, what the hell?
Yeah, exactly. No offense to the cutie tears of you guys.
Yeah.
But that's not something I'm going to do. I'm not going to wrestle a water buffalo. If you came to me and said, dude, you got to fly to the Philippines, you got to wrestle a water buffalo in a rice paddy. No. No, absolutely yeah. not, no. Couldn't I just wrestle some big guy?
Yeah.
I got a cow, you know, 16 feet from me over here in southern Illinois. Couldn't I just go wrestle that?
Yeah.
But
yeah.
It was old school in terms of I don't recall ever putting any protective gear on.
That's cool.
It was old school like that, but it was not ancient school.
Right.
When Guru Lucky was teaching last, he was on dialysis four times a week, and God rest his soul, he was again a fantastic person, and I miss him greatly as well. And I think the martial arts are missing out because of the lack of him and his son both. I think they died too much. But he was his last place to hold class was in the back of a book warehouse. This sounds very assassination-like now, isn't it?
I know, right? Book warehouse.
But we literally had to watch out for the shelving because we would knock the shelving over during Numerado, and then a bunch of books would fall down. He would still instruct, even though he was on dialysis four times a week, and it was one of those things where maybe you didn't appreciate it if you were there all the time, but because I had to fly in and you know stayed with the family and was kind of an adopted fat guy. I almost said son, but I don't want to presume too much. But I was that guy, you know, and I'm looking at guys who live right next door to Ted, and I'm like, what do you mean you haven't seen him in 3 months? Why haven't you been knocking on his door on the train every day? What, you know, I didn't comprehend. You don't appreciate what's there with you, you know. So
right.
we trained old school. I've got some busted knuckles out of the deal, but I can tell you when it's going to rain. But that's part of the training.
I think we all
agree
to you.
Yeah.
It was pretty, you know, I mean, Bob, you trained for a while with Guru Ted as well, and it's one of those things you just learn to, later you tell these stories and you look at people and they're kind of staring at you like he busted your knuckle, and you're like, yeah, well, that's an insurance nightmare. Insurance. You're funny.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
you're funny.
Absolutely.
What's that?
Well,
yeah.
One of the happiest times of my life was when Mark and I were going up to Santa Barbara every Saturday to train with Guru Ted when he moved up there. It was, I went to his wake in 96, and it was very emotional. I went out and met my old, after the wake, I met my old friend Cuervo, and toasted last goodbye to Teddy. Now, I did want to ask you, Lucky, now, I only met Lucky once. I met him up at the Bakersfield Hall. How close were their passing? Like 6 months or a year, weren't they? They were very close when they passed.
It was, I don't remember the exact dates, but I can tell you exactly when Ted died because it affected me so much. But I remember when he called me to tell me that his father had passed as well. You're right. It was, I want to say right at a year, not, you know, right at by the date, but somewhere around a year, a little over a year, that they passed away from one another. It was, Guru Lucky, and I don't know if the family wants me to tell this or not, but Guru Lucky had been in the shunt that they had put in his leg for the dialysis had become infected. And it wasn't the dialysis that finally killed him. It was the gangrene from the shunt. Long story short, probably one of the worst things a martial artist can think of, besides becoming paralyzed, is having a leg amputated. And God bless the people who are able to deal with that. They are much stronger than I probably would ever be. But as a martial artist, you know, that's one of those things you look at and go, okay, that's a whole other mountain to have to overcome, you know.
Right.
They ended up amputating, and I was not there, so I'm telling this third hand. But they ended up amputating both legs. And he, much as in his own style, Guru Lucky told him to get out of the room. He was going to take a nap. And I can hear him, you know, get out of the room. I'm tired. I need to sleep. And he went to sleep and never woke up again.
Oh.
Oh, wow.
And that greatly affected the whole family. I mean, he was obviously, you know, well, he was the man. He was the guy who, you know, don't get me wrong, Mama Rose was Mama. And she kept the family together. You know, you have Guru Ted was the only son. You had seven children. All the rest were girls. And it's just one of those things where it was very tough for Guru Ted, and equally as tough on the sisters. I'm certain, and I stay in close contact with them as well. And I hope I'm not telling tales that they would not want told, but it's. I think it's important that we all know, you know, the truth and how it happened, as opposed to,
right.
You know, oh, well, I heard this rumor and I heard that rumor. And, well, the truth is he was in a hospital and he passed away from gangrene and the shock of having two legs amputated medically, not by accident or anything. It was a medical necessity. And then Guru Ted, I got the phone call from my mom, actually. His mom had called my mom. I was at work at the radio station, and I got the call about 2 o'clock in the afternoon on the day he died, and I can tell you exactly, it was 2:01. And my mom called and said, and she's passed away now too, and he called her mom. You know, it was one of those things that our families became very close. When he would come here, he would stay with us. When I would go there, I would stay with them. And I still think of his family as my family, and I will protect them with my blood until the day I die, because it is about Ohana. And if you don't,
right.
The Hawaiian definition of that is so much wider than, and please don't quote Lilo and Stitch, but it is so much wider than, oh, I have the word Ohana tattooed on my arm, and I went to Disney one time, and I swear I almost punched a guy on a monorail. Oh, you got a Lilo and Stitch tattoo. I swear I will kill you.
I know, yeah.
Oh, my God.
It's people like that just go, yeah, you think what you want, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
I just know
but that was their only connection with it. So, but the Filipinos as well, and again, it's not my culture, but what I see in them is very much you have an extended family. It's not necessarily about blood. Sometimes it's the guy
right.
who's not even related to you that you call uncle that has been adopted into the family, and you know, it's just one of those things. And that's there is that loyalty. And I think sometimes in society today, and I'm not trying to make any political statements, but in society at the base, if we had more of that, we would have a lot less problems.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, I don't know how many times Rashida has called this white boy her brother.
Yeah.
She's got a place to stay when she's down in L.A. I've got a place to stay when I'm in Seattle, and I plan on gaining 10 pounds if I ever make it up there.
Oh, heck yeah.
Mom.
Yeah, because she always says, let me see, I'm saying this, I've never, face-to-face, Rusty, we've never met, but I'm guessing in your Filipino heritage, eat more, right?
Right.
Yeah, see?
You know, Every gathering that we have, in fact, Christmas is going to be so much fun. But luckily, I'm not cooking for this one. But every my aunt is going to be cooking.
Be sure and send Rusty more Christmas music. She loves Christmas music.
But yeah, I'm looking forward to at any type of gathering where there's food. It's eat more, eat more.
Yeah. Yeah.
So stronger. When I was a kid, it was, yeah, chicken adobo, pork adobo.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, eat more, eat more. When I was a kid, it was eat more so you can grow strong, and now it's just eat more.
Yeah.
Come on, help yourself.
Yeah.
Help
yeah,
yourself.
As Mama Rose used to say, you big boned, and I'm like, Mama Rose, these bones are awful squishy. I think that's just fat.
And then she'd go, oh, you're so funny, Nako.
Exactly, exactly. And you know, she went back in the kitchen going, no, he's right. That is fat. He's just huge.
Well, it's
really
not
telling all the sisters.
That.
He's eating me out of house and home.
Well, you mentioned something, girl, about Ted. He was such a great man. And you're right about not appreciating what you have until it's gone. If you live next door to him, you'd be bowing down, please teach me, please teach me. And he was so fun to work with. I mentioned this on our very first show with the late Lindy Largusa. I was doing some footwork training with Guru Ted in Santa Barbara, and he was having me skip backwards. Now, I put that in the closet before. I can't chew bubble gum and walk at the same time, right?
You don't do a lot of skipping in L.A., Bob?
You're in the wrong end of town or right end of town or however you want to put it.
Yeah, you've got to head to North Hollywood, brother. Do some skipping.
next door to North Hollywood, Matt. But no, I was skipping backwards. Teddy looked me right in the eye and looked me up and down and says, oh, my God, you are white.
Yeah, that sounds like him.
It caught me off guard. It was so funny the way he said it.
Oh my God, you are white. That's hilarious.
He should have followed that. He should have followed that with, my God, you are white and straight. Can't skip, no rhythm. Wow.
I was at a seminar quite a long time ago in the early 90s with Mark Stewart, Edgar Solite, and Larry Hartzell. And this is how I want to segue your training with Guru Larry, that he was on the ground with somebody, having an arm bar. He looks this guy in the face and says, okay, swing with your other hand. The guy he had in the arm bar looked at Larry and said, no. Because he knew he was going to get jacked up.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Amen, brother. Amen. Let me say this about good Larry and seminars. Fantastic instructor. An amazing guy. And he and my mom went to competing high schools in Charlotte, North Carolina. And all the time he lived in L.A., he still kept that Southern accent. Kind of talk a little bit like this.
like Elvis.
Okay, here's how you punch this, and you step crossway into the female triangle, and then you boom, see? And it was always boom, see, at the end of it. So we always picked on him about that. But my mom said that Larry always went to the, she referred to it as Snob Hill High School. So long story short, fantastic. But, yeah, if you were assisting him, let me just say, there are certain people in seminars who always do that. And I put that in air quotes. It's always that guy or that gal who says, well, what if he monkey fists you in the face? Or what if he... There's always that what-if guy. Let me just say, from the guy on the ground with my nose and Larry's armpit hair, I hate you. And I've never liked you people. I don't want you people to ever come to any of my seminars that ask anything like that. If it could be done, it would have been done. Please don't do that. You know what's going to happen to the poor guy.
I hate it when that guy or that gal does that.
And it's always the same guy.
Yeah,
they never
It's usually the guy in a pair of camouflage pants that don't fit and his crack is showing by 6 inches.
Yeah.
And he hasn't changed clothes in 6 weeks.
Yeah, and he's got a new stick or something. Yeah. Why is that?
Yeah, well, because he's never worked with one before, and he's trying to hurt you, huh?
Yeah,
that's right.
But yeah, I have to say, Larry had more of those people who would show up and say, well, but yeah, how did you know? That's not gonna you're not gonna get him in that pretzel maneuver right away. What if he punches you sometime during that?
Mm-hmm.
Let me just say this: Larry used to be the guy that would hold the heavy bag for Sigung Lee.
Mm-hmm.
He's a big man. He was a big guy. He played football. He was a big guy. And he said he used to get the most pounding migraines from holding that bag.
Right.
So imagine the shock that was coming through there. And that's who he learned to punch from.
Yeah.
So when they asked that kind of stuff, it was always, okay, well, he's just going to hit you. You realize that, right?
Right.
Yeah, and I learned, I had a great opportunity to learn from both of these guys, because one, and Bob, you can attest to this, Gurted moved like he was on melted butter on ice skates. I mean, he was so fluid and so much finesse and precision. Then you had Sifu Larry, who didn't have to move that precisely. He did, but he didn't have to move that precisely, and he still moved very smoothly, but he would also just, at the end of it, pick you up and throw you down, because he was a large guy.
Right.
And there were times when he was at the house and he would, it'd be 3 o'clock in the morning, and Larry liked his beer, specifically imports, and because he said it gave him didn't give him a hangover because there wasn't as many chemicals in it. So anyway, long story short, not getting into the beer company's business either. But he would sit there and he would think of something, and you know, I would go to bed and he would come knock on the door and say, "Hey, you up?" "Well, I am now." "Yeah, what do you need, Larry?" And he'd say, come on out, we're going to work on something." And I would come out into my living room in my boxer shorts and literally look around, and he has moved all my furniture in my living room. And you're going, okay, this cannot be good. He's been eating fish and chips and drinking beer all night. And now we're going to work on
something. And the furniture's moved. Yeah.
And the furniture moved. That means I'm going to sit on this carpet hard. And you would learn a lot from those kind of sessions, but there was some times that the elbow would tweak just a little too far, and I've got some lasting things from that. But, and in seminars, unbelievable. And he never was at a loss for an answer to a question either. No matter what they came up with, you know, what if the guy came up with a scorpion kick? What if he did this? Well, what if he did this? But I have to say, Larry was the first one to say to me, and I call him by first name because back in the day, we didn't use the respectable terms that we use now. So if anyone's offended by that, I apologize, but that's just a habit. And I should probably break that habit. Well, it was the old days. And now I'm an old guy. He had never a loss for an answer to things, and he was the first one to explain to me that people put martial arts instructors, and in specific stars like Sigung Lee, on pedestals. And this was one of the ways he explained it to me. He goes, you know, he put his pants on just like everybody else does, one leg at a time. He probably farted, and he probably held his wife's head under the covers when he did it. And you know, you don't think about that kind of thing, but you're just like, okay, he did a Dutch oven. I have never heard of, never thought of Bruce doing a Dutch oven, but yeah, he might have, you know, and we do. We make them into more than they are. And for them, I would imagine, I'm not one of those people, but I would imagine that's difficult to live up to. You know, you meet people and even I have met people who say, oh, wow, I've read about this or I've heard about this. And I'm like, wow, that is really exaggerated. That is not true at all. Like, who told you that? You know, and I'm sure you guys have had the same thing, you know, and that's on such a small scale compared to, you know, the people that we looked up to, studied with, and respect. They have it so much more difficult to live up to that image that is not really them.
Mm-hmm.
And we sometimes... are guilty of putting them on those pedestals as well. Mm-hmm. I thought of them as friends. You know, they were my instructors, but they were also my friends and my family. And I love and miss them dearly. I stopped teaching when Guru Ted passed away for 3.5 years. I just didn't have any drive for it. I didn't want to see a stick. I didn't want to go near it. I was done.
Mm-hmm.
And without my lovely wife, I would not have gotten back into it. And one of our senior instructors in the Lakai Lakai Association, Temujin, Guru Greg Allen out of Texas, who last I heard is the chief of police in El Paso. God bless him.
oh, yeah.
That's some hard work down there. That's right on the border. That's, you know. But he said, you know, Ted and Lucky passed this on to you. Larry passed this on to you. Why have you stopped teaching? You need to pass it on. And I took that to heart, and I took, you know, my wife's considerations under as well, and started teaching again, and they're right, you know, and so much that we value, I missed out on 3.5 years of passing it on to people, and who knows, there may have been the next person that needed to know something in there.
Mm-hmm.
And it is a great responsibility that we have by being blessed to have this gift that was given us that we get to share. And it is a gift, but it is at the same time a huge responsibility to take care of and to nurture.
Mm-hmm.
And it is a lifestyle. It's not just I can't think of a day where I don't think of or practice the martial arts in some way, shape, or form. Now, maybe I'm not out in the woodshed every day practicing like I should, but there are days where I sit and I plan and I take notes and I still do it old school. I'm not much on the computer typing it into that because those things crash, I found out.
Mm-hmm.
And then all your work goes away.
Yeah.
I was very lucky to study with Larry. He was extremely talented, and he had this innate capability of seeing things. I don't know if anybody has ever worked with the CAD program, computer-aided drafting, but he could look at a lock and see it in 180 degrees difference and know where the pain could be made the most of.
Mm-hmm.
And that is something that you rarely see. Professor Wally J was another one who could do that. Thought very highly of him. We have lost so many in the last 18 months that we need to really start taking stock. I mean, from Sifu Ted Wong to you mentioned Guru Lindsay Largusa. I literally had just spoken with him about coming out to Vegas and doing some instruction out there, and he had some great plans in the works, and it's just, you know, it was so sad and so sudden for all of us, and it is, I guess we're all getting to that age where it makes us suddenly take stock of where things are and
mm-hmm.
How precious time is.
Exactly.
Absolutely. Guru, you know, if as martial artists, if we can have one person touch our lives, like a Guru Ted, Guru Lucky, Guru Lindsay, Guru Larry, I feel very fortunate to have known those people. I miss them great, with a great deal, but I'm very fortunate that they were in my life.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. And we are very fortunate. You know, I mean, who would have thought that a kid who was born in Belleville, Illinois, lives now in West Frankfort, Illinois, who has, and I think they counted the dogs twice, 8,000 people in this town. And I'm serious. I really think they counted some of them twice. You look around and you go, when I had Guru Ted or Guru Larry in, people didn't think twice about it. They were like, oh, yeah, it's that guy from, that's that boy from California you flew in, right?
Right,
yeah.
Right.
I even had Sifu Bustillo in, you know, and we had 8 people show up to a seminar. 8. And that included me.
Oh, my.
Wow.
I've lost a lot of money on seminars because people just don't understand who they are or what they are, you know. And for us, it has a value. For other folks, maybe not so much, you know. But for the last time I had Sifu Ted in, Guru Lehrer Ted, I should say, in for a seminar. We had 35 people, you know, and they came from, one guy drove 9.5 hours from the other side of Ohio to come in for that seminar.
Wow.
Wow.
Another guy flew in from Virginia to take the seminar. There were some things that happened after Guru Ted passed away that got out, you know, saying this is the last interview with Guru Ted and this, that, and the other. Well, that's not true. the actual last interview of his is still on videotape sitting in my home, and it may never get released, but it's something that I go back and I look at it and I refer to it a lot because it's important to me. Like you said, Bob, we talk about, you know, these guys and we miss them, and we still value their instruction and we still hear their voices in our heads and we still... you know, and if that makes us a little bit crazy, that's possible. I remember my mom, first time she ever saw me break a board over my head, she walked up afterwards and, you know, I've got my black belt on and my crisp white uniform, and she walks up and she goes, "Exactly how do you practice that the first time?" And I go, "Well, you take a board and you smack yourself in the head, Mom." She goes, "Mm-hmm. That sounds smart," and walks off.
Mom, you gotta love them.
Yeah, thank you. I'm gonna tell a story on Larry here real quick while we're talking about moms. Larry, no matter how much of a badass he was, got chased out of my mom's kitchen with a broom.
What? I can't wait to hear about this. Wow.
Hang on, this is, well, first of all, it's a Southern woman, and she had just mopped the linoleum, so.
Oh, God.
So he walks in and starts walking in the back door and comes across the kitchen, and she's like, "Get out of here," and picks up the broom and starts chasing him out. "That is a freshly mopped floor, young man."
Wow.
I'm standing outside, and he backs up like somebody was pointing a rifle at him, and he looks at me, and I go, "Dude, you just got chased by my mom with the broom. You just flew in from Australia. You were one of Bruce Lee's students, and you just got chased out by my mom with the broom." And he looked at me and goes, "Shut up."
That's funny.
I think she could have took him. I really...
Without the broom even, right?
Yeah, well, it's possible. You know, I'm 6'3" tall. My mom was about a foot shorter than that, and she still, to the day she passed away, would have me lean over and she'd slap me in the face.
Oh.
Wow.
Mom.
Well, girl, many, many years ago, Curtis Long, which I talked to again finally, he sells watches. He imports watches and manufactures them. Now he used to own... CFW Enterprises, which published Inside Kung Fu magazine.
Yes,
well,
sir. I used to shoot.
He put on this martial arts trade show years ago, and he was showing the videos he was producing. And I was in one of them. I was in one of Mark Stewart's videos before I'm in like 27 of them now, except the magazine no longer exists. So I walk into this room, and they're previewing Mark's videos, and I hear this guy look at me, and he says, "Well, you just missed the best part of the whole video. It was the part you were in." I look down, and it's Sifu Ted Wong.
Yeah.
Those are one of those moments that just sticks with you forever. I'm like, "Wong, Sifu, thank you." You know, it was just amazing. We just had some amazing people back then. I mean, they're still out there, but we were just touched by some of the best of the best.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
I was only in one of Guru Ted's videos, and it was the pocket stick video. And people always refer to it as, "Oh, the one where they giggle at the end." Yeah. We had outtakes. and we thought it would be really cool. We were the first ones to do it. take that, Jimmy Kimmel. We were the first ones to put outtakes at the end of our because here's what happened. You know, you got Guru Mark, you got me, you got all of these other guys, and we all flew in from all over the nation, and we're all standing there, and Guru Ted is doing what we refer to as the extra. He's saying, "Okay, thanks for watching, we appreciate it, blah, blah, blah." And he says, "If you're watching in your homes, whether in your living rooms or in your bedrooms," and I start laughing. And I'm like, he goes, "Okay, cut. Why are you laughing?" And I go, "Who the hell would be watching a martial arts video in their bedroom? What's wrong with these people?" kind of sick, demented people are buying these things? We now I've got a whole vision of our audience, and they're all in their 90s, and they're naked, and it's just, ah. And so the whole last 15 minutes of the thing, we're busting up, and there were, you know, there was stuff that we weren't prepared for, like Good Ted really didn't have a script. So when you see that video, it was done like 5 minutes ahead of time. Mark would take me aside and goes, here's this drill that I teach, and we're going to call this blah, blah, blah. And Rich would go, okay, here's this Lamoro flow that we do. And if you see those outtakes at the end of it, it's because I had no clue what they were teaching. And I had 3 broken ribs. And that padded stuff that they say they're throwing us on, yeah, that was plywood that was bent over 2x4s. That is not padded, and I was all taped up with 3 broken ribs. So.
Oh my God.
And half the time when Gooden Mark would take me down, he would stand on my hair because my hair was considerably longer then. And I'm like, okay, that's real pain, dude. Get off my hair.
And I'll get off my hair. That hurts, especially when you try to get up.
Yeah, it's like, stop, dude. Stop. You're messing up the quaff.
Oh my God.
Well, I was there for many of Guru's videos. I was there for his Spotted Toucan. I wasn't in it, but I was there to see the filming of Guru Mark and Leonard Frigg and. And you're right. He had no script. He had no idea what he was going to do.
It was all off the cuff. Those are the best. Those really are the best types of videos because the scripted ones always come out as kind of droll, and you know you're like, okay, it almost looks campy. And it's an amazing thing to be involved in. And people probably don't have any idea how long it actually takes to do a 45-minute video. We did like 8.5-9 hours of work putting that video together.
Right. That's
exactly.
For sure.
Well,
and by the way, nobody fed us. Curtis Wong finally came in and bought us Chinese food. So.
Oh, there you go.
That's right. He was Chinese, El Pollo Loco. He fed us like you wouldn't believe. Sifu, you know what? It's almost 1:00.
Yeah, we got like 3 minutes, and where did all the time go? We were having so much fun.
That Indian can't shut up.
I really appreciate you calling in, girl. And I lost count on how many times he said, to make a long story short.
I know.
And he failed.
Yes. Somehow I turned a short story into 2 hours.
That's right. And we had a blast. We really enjoyed it.
We had a blast. We did.
Well,
Thank you so much for having me on.
Your show is fantastic. I hope you keep it up.
Girl? Your comment was funny. When I asked you to do this show, you said, well, let me ask my wife.
That's exactly right.
For me to do. You know the old saying, happy wife, happy life?
If mama ain't happy, ain't nobody happy.
And she makes sure nobody's happy.
I'm going to leave that one to you, Bob.
Well, thank you so much, Guru West, for joining
us
today.
Yes, thank you.
And thank you also, Sifu Bob, my brother in the arts. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Join us next week, listeners. Next week we will have several guests from Western martial arts, fencing primarily, and we're going to be discussing the differences and similarities between Eastern and Western martial arts. So tune in for that show next Sunday at 6 p.m., and we hope to see everybody then. Thank you again, Wes. Thank you again, Bob. We'll talk to everyone next time. Goodbye.